The International Space Station has hundreds of experiments on board, testing everything from how plants grow in space to the effects of microgravity on an astronaut's eyes. But NASA may have scored the ultimate, the controlled test with test subjects Scott and Mark Kelly, twin astronauts. NASA sent Scott up to the space station, and they kept Mark here on the ground, and they're going to be testing what a full year of zero gravity will do to the body compared to Mark staying here on the ground. And we have one of the pair joining us now. Mark Kelly is a NASA astronaut based out of Tucson. He joins us from KUAZ Studios. Welcome to Science Friday.
Oh, thank you. I'm a big fan of the show.
Thank you. I want to invite our listeners, if they have questions for you about living in space, our number 844-724-8255, 844-SciTalk. You can also tweet us at SciFry, SCIFRI. Tell us how it feels to have your twin up there circling overhead while you're down here.
Well, you know, we've been doing this kind of thing for a long time, you know, over 15 years now. So it's not unusual. He's been there before. Like I have, but this time it's a bit different at a year. So he's got a long road ahead of him.
How did you both as twins get to be astronauts?
We were both Navy test pilots. You know, before that, we both flew, you know, aircraft off of an aircraft carrier. So we've had similar careers. And like most test pilots do, we applied for the astronaut program.
And how do you communicate with Scott while he's up there on the space station?
Well, you know, you can't call up, but he has a phone. There is a couple of them, in fact, internet phones that are connected to computers, and he can make a phone call from space to anywhere on Earth, so he calls me on my cell phone.
And it rings, it says what on your cell phone?
So it's a number from Houston, Texas, one of several numbers, and my daughter, Claire, who is a senior in high school, just graduated, she put it in there, my contact. So it says space, and there's a picture of an alien and a rocket ship.
Claire did that to you, huh?
Yeah.
Tell us what a bit about life in space. If you're up there, if your brother is up there for a year, does he have to know how to be a doctor, a self-doctor? And you know, is he drawing blood samples for comparison with you down here on Earth and things like that, sort of medical things he needs to know?
You know, to be a space station crew member for an extended period of time like that, whether it's 6 months or a year, you've got to be everything, right? You're the plumber, you're the mechanic, you're the scientist, you know, you're the secretary, you're the cleaning person, you're the doctor or the nurse. But to answer your question, yes, he draws his own blood in space. He could have another crew member do it. Which is often the case. My brother finds it's easier if he just does it himself. And then those samples go back to Earth, often on a SpaceX spacecraft.
Talking with Mark Kelly, astronaut on Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. And how eagerly do you await these cargo ships as they come to this space station?
Well, I think they're eagerly awaiting the next one, which I think might be at the end of June. And the reason is that we recently lost a Progress resupply vehicle going up to the space station. It launched. It had some major issues, maybe an explosion. I don't think they're exactly sure yet. And it never docked with the space station, and it had a lot of food and clothing on board. So now they have to reprioritize all the resupply flights. So they're looking forward to this one.
Any priceless personal effects that might
come? You know, I think there are a couple things for my brother, not anything just because of where the care packages go up, right? You get to send stuff up to people in space, just like you would send them, you know, cookies if they were overseas, maybe. Mm-hmm. So we can kind of do the same thing. But the most important thing that I sent him is on the next spacecraft.
You won't share that with us?
No.
I didn't think so.
You might hear about it later.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, we'll turn the dial up to 11 on that one. I have a question here from a tweet that came in from Hugh Fetzer, who questions, does your brother have an exit clause in his one-year contract? Is there,
is there a secret word he says?
Yeah. I mean, is there a medical emergency or a psychological emergency that could send you home early?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my brother certainly isn't going to have the psychological emergency. I can guarantee that. But there's always for any crew member in space, you could have a serious medical problem. I mean, one thing we really worried about with people is getting kidney stones. Often you get dehydrated in space because the way the fluid shifts in your body, and people are more susceptible to dehydration, which makes you more susceptible to getting something like a kidney stone.
Right.
So we worry about that. I mean, that could be an issue where you would have to bring somebody home. But there, as you know, there's so many other things. But it's, you know, it's typically reserved to a serious medical problem, and they can get home pretty quickly. You know, you could climb in the Soyuz and button it up and undock and, you know, be back on Earth in a number of hours if you had to.
Let's go to a quick phone call before we go to the break. Let's go to Jacob in St. Augustine, Florida. Hi, Jacob.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I just had a question for Mark. Is NASA asking you to restrict your physical activities so that it mirrors that of your brothers on the International Space Station as part of this experiment?
Good question.
You know, we talked about that, and they were actually more concerned with me not making big changes in my own physical conditioning from what it was before. So I did a lot of pre-flight testing, a lot of blood, MRIs, ultrasounds, some stuff. I'm not even sure what I was doing. You know, they didn't want me to make big changes. So I'm not matching what he does with diet or exercise. I'm more being consistent.
All right. Nice call.
Gotcha.
One last question before the break. Who's got the better right stuff, Mark? You or
like
Scott?
Like being a better pilot?
Well, a better astronaut.
Better astronaut? I don't, you know. I'd say we both do adequate jobs.
Okay. Wait till you hear what your brother said. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to hear from Scott Kelly aboard the International Space Station earlier today when we had time to do it after his first 2 months in space. We're going to hear from him and more with Mark after the break. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow talking with astronaut Mark Kelly. He's part of NASA's year-long twin study with his brother Scott, who was up on the International Space Station, been up there a few months. If you have questions about living in space, our number 844-724-8255 or 844-SciTalk. We have quite a number of tweets that have come in. I'm sure you're used to this, Mark. First from Sherry, she said, I've heard the equipment on the space station can be quite loud. What is the background noise level like?
Yeah, it's a good question. It is, it's pretty noisy. And some places are noisier than others. I would say the quietest place is in the Japanese experiment module, the GEM that I brought up in 2008, I think. And other places, it's pretty loud. It could get a little uncomfortable, and it affects people's hearing long term. So that's a continuing problem. But like any vehicle that needs an environmental system, you're going to have pumps and fans and those things. And there's not a lot you can do about it.
Daniel Yao asks, what do you think about bringing on China as a partner to the International Space Station community?
That is a great question and a big question and a geopolitical question. You know, we've had that discussion at NASA, and I think there are some people at times that think that would be a great thing to do, you know, to offset some of the costs. These things are expensive to do. And our relationship, you know, with Russia, you know, it's not always great, but I think it's often better because of our cooperation in space. You know, personally, I think it's beneficial to us to cooperate with as many countries as possible. But this is this is a question for our leaders in Washington, D.C.
As they say, above your pay grade in D.C. Isn't there a law, Congress passed a law against cooperating solely with China in space?
I think that's correct. Yes, yeah. Several years ago, I think that actually happened.
Let's see if we've got a couple of more questions here to go to. Somebody asks, the Black Files asks, do astronauts ever gain weight up there? If so, why?
Yeah, no, people generally lose weight. I do. I mean, for a number of reasons. One is, you know, you might not be very hungry the first few days of a space shuttle flight. You also don't have time, you know, and the portion size is pretty small and it's well controlled. So normally people do lose weight. Not everybody. I don't know of many cases where people gained weight.
All right. We're going to go now to earlier this morning, an interview I did with Scott Kelly. We had to wait until there was a window with uninterrupted space to ground satellite communications. And here's how that went.
Please stand by for a voice check from PRI Science Friday.
Hi there. Station, this is PRI Science Friday. How do you hear me?
I have you loud and clear. Welcome aboard the International Space Station.
Well, thank you very much for inviting us. Scott, your longest mission before this was 159 days. How do you compare that mission? Do you have a different mindset that you do for a whole year versus 3-4 months?
You know, absolutely. So last time I was here a little bit more than 5 months. When you when it's that duration, at least in my case, you can kind of see the end of it from the beginning. I launched in October, got home in March, and you just look, you know, you look at it on almost as a month-to-month basis, you know, get through November, Thanksgiving, December, Christmas, and then the New Year's, and pretty soon it's almost time to come home. This time it's much different. You know, I know I'll come home someday, but from my perspective, I live and work here now. I'm going to be here for a long time, and as such, I just kind of have to pace myself.
Mm. We talked to Don Pettit a little while back about the zero-gravity cups and espresso maker. Have you been clinking your coffee cups up there?
You know, we used Don's cup that he designed when we used the espresso maker early on once we had it hooked up. I was surprised at how well it actually worked. I didn't think it would you know, make it seem like you were drinking out of a cup. It's pretty pretty clever design. But we don't have a whole lot of those capsules for the espresso machine, so we haven't used it in a while, and hopefully we will. And Samantha's throwing a cup at me real quick to show you. So here's the cup, and yeah, like I said, it's pretty incredible how when you go like this, it actually seems to pour with gravity, even though there's no gravity. But haven't used it much, but look forward to using it again.
We spoke to Julie Robinson from Johnson, and she mentioned something called suction pants. That has to do with how microgravity affects your vision. Have you been able to try them out? Have you noticed that your vision is affected by long-term microgravity?
Well, that's the first I've heard of that that term. It could be something that I had not had training on, or something that's going to come in the future. To I guess what she's probably talking about is mitigating the fluid shift that occurs. You know, gravity on Earth pushes a lot of the fluid, you know, out of your head towards your feet, and up here it's just all redistributed. So you generally have a higher pressure in your head, and that's why some astronauts, me included, when they first get up here, they kind of have a puffy head, and that kind of continues. As far as my vision, you know, it seems like my middle vision is and distance vision is a little bit better. My reading vision's a little bit worse. You know, it varies from time to time up here. You know, I did have some little bit of structural changes last time, and I'm sure I'll have that this time. And, you know, it's part of the price that some people pay for going up here, and we're trying to understand it better and understand the risks and how to mitigate those risks. And hopefully some of the experiments we're doing on board even next week will help us do that.
The Russians had a cosmonaut up there for 14 months. Did you talk to him? Did he give you any hints or tips about what to expect?
I did not talk to him. I don't think I've ever met him, but I did talked to Vladimir Titov, who spent about a year in space on the Mir space station, and he gave me you know, one bit of advice, and it's just like, it was basically just pace yourself. You know, you're going to be there for a long time, and just you know, try to keep a good balance of work and rest, and you'll do just fine.
We're speaking to your brother Mark today also. Now, which one of you has the better right stuff? Is there a sibling rivalry in space?
That would be me.
Why am I not surprised?
I'm sure. Now, I'm sure he would say the same thing. You know, we are, you know, and I'm just kidding around. I have no idea. You know, we're similar in a lot of ways, different in others. We're, you know, naturally competitive people, but not competitive with, you know, between each other. You know, our experiences in space are have been a little bit different, but we both recognize that just having the ability to fly in space once is a real privilege, and you know, it's just really been an incredible thing that we could share together this great experience. And you know, both of us having flown four times is really you know, hard to believe.
I know he's on the ground here comparing what happens to him during your time up there in space. Have you two noticed any differences already that you can compare?
Well, most of that comparative research is you know, with samples of blood and urine and other things, and you know, cognitive ability, some cognitive experiments, experiments using MRIs and you know, structural changes within our bodies and the chemistry of our bodies, our genetics, things like that. So there's stuff that you don't see that you know, the researchers at some point will publish papers on, you know, for instance, how, you know, my DNA looked one way before flight and how his compared before flight, and then maybe how mine changed over time while I was here, where his, you know, in a certain area stayed the same. But that's not stuff that we can see at this point, but, you know, stuff that's very important nonetheless.
We asked our listeners what questions they had for you, and we have a couple of them from Twitter. I'm going to see if I can share them with you. David Shee wanted to know if the likelihood of infection is higher on Earth or on ISS, and is there an effect on your microbiome, and are you measuring that too?
Yeah, so one of the studies we're doing with my brother is a microbiome study, how our microbiome changes. And the microbiome, for people that might not be familiar with it, is, you know, all this bacteria that resides within your digestive system. And apparently, from what I understand, there's more of those cells that aren't you than there are of your own human cells. So it's, you know, it's critical to our physiology. It's very important, and it does change when we're in space, and we're comparing that, you know, the changes in my microbiome with my brother's over the period of time that we're here. And as getting back to the first part of your question about infections, our immune system generally is depressed up here for, you know, I'm not sure why, maybe someone knows exactly why, but we actually are studying that. So in some respects, I would guess you would be, you know, a little bit more prone to certain types of infections, things that we have on board here that can infect you. But, for instance, you know, there's no cold virus up here, the flu virus, things like that. Certain types of bacteria, we don't have them on the space station. Therefore, you know, people generally don't get sick like you might on Earth, at least not very often.
All right, Scott, thank you very much for taking time to be with us today, and good luck to you.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you, and it was great talking to you today.
Station, this is Houston ACR. Thank you. That concludes our event.
And thank you, Science Friday. Station, we are now resuming operational audio communications.
Thanks, Kathy.
Great job.
And that was my chat with astronaut Mark Kelly earlier today, Scott Kelly, I'm sorry, living up in the space station. I have with me on the phone, on our ISDN line, is Mark Kelly. What do you think of that interview? Did you learn anything from it, Mark?
Was I supposed to be listening? I didn't think there was going to be a quiz. I hear from him all the time.
Oh, I'll bet. Are you keeping track of your microbiome? We follow that a lot on this program.
Well, I mailed NASA a sample recently, so I think they are.
They should. We have a couple of more questions coming in before we run out of time. I'm Ira Flato. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Talking with Mark Kelly right here about living in space. Let's see if we can get a couple of phone calls in, if you don't mind. Let's go to Rob in Brookings, South Dakota. Hi, Rob.
Hi. I have kind of a less scientific question. I know you guys stay pretty busy up there, but what sort of pranks do you play on each other when you have time?
You know, we made practical jokes illegal in the astronaut office. There's actually a rule against that. They've had some bad experiences, and sometimes, you know, it's not an environment, but I'm sure on the space station, you know, where people are living for long periods of time, there probably is a little bit of that. And, you know, my own experience with playing a practical joke on one of my crew members once didn't go so well. So I certainly understand the reason that the astronaut office discourages it.
Mm. All right. Thanks for the call. Is there anything that's missing from the space station that you would like to have as a piece of hardware or something, you know, that is not there that you say, hey, you know, I wish they had put this on?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, we have a couple treadmills on board, a weightlifting machine, a bike. Swimming pool would be nice. It'd be hard to keep the water in.
Is there a big screen TV up there?
You know, my brother got manifested a very small high-definition projector and a screen to do primarily video teleconferences. But at the same time, you know, you could also watch movies on it. And he recently tweeted a picture of them watching the movie Gravity, which had Sandra Bullock going through a hatch on the space station. And the screen is at that same spot in that hatch. Hmm. So it's pretty interesting to see the photo.
You know, I noticed the tragic weather that you're having in Texas with the flooding and the deaths. But up there in space for 6 months, do you ever just miss the weather? It's the same every
day. Well, so, you know, my brother has talked about that during his last mission, you know, his last space flight, which was 6 months. I've only done a short, you know, short duration space shuttle flight, so that's not really a factor for me. He has mentioned that a number of times, that the one thing he misses is the wind and the rain, because on the space station, you know, it's pretty consistent, low humidity. Well, at least in the U.S. segment, mm-hmm. It's a little higher humidity in the Russian segment, but it's, you know, the temperatures are really consistent, so it's same every day.
Mm-hmm. How is the adjustment process? What do you go through when you get back?
Well, your body has to readjust, even from a short duration flight. You know, 2 days after you get back, you're incredibly sore. It's kind of like if you've never lifted weights before and then you went and did a bunch of squats, you know, with a lot of weight. Kind of feel like that a couple days later. Your neurovestibular system's a little messed up, especially the first day. People have a habit as they turn corners of running into walls. So you can't drive a car for a while. After a year, I don't know how long it'll be for my brother before they allow him to drive a car again. It might be a month. So your body has to go through this readjustment phase. And I think it, you know, to get back to 100%, it's typically about as much time as you were in space is the recovery time.
Well, thank you very much for taking time to be with us today, Mark.
And, great speaking to you, Ira. Thank you.
And good luck with the project, and the best wishes to Gabby from us all here, too.
I'll tell her. Thank you.
We've like to also thank Scott Kelly for joining us earlier from the International Space Station, and also NASA for hooking us up to the space station, too. One last thing. We see sunlight every day, but what might the sun sound like? You're listening to the effect of a few dozen resonances, different sound waves bouncing back and forth inside the sun. Astronomers at Stanford use an instrument called the Michelson Doppler Imager on the SOHO spacecraft to track surface oscillations made by those ricocheting sound waves, sort of a solar seismograph. Let's listen to a little bit of it. This is 40 days worth of that data, filtered and cleaned and sped up by 42,000 times to make it audible. And this is just a few dozen of some 10 million resonances going on inside the sun right now. Alexander Kozovichev took those readings and got that tweaked up for us. And as a reminder, we want to use this as a reminder to help our science club explain the sun. Go to sciencefriday.com/scienceclub for details. And for the kitchen geek in you, our final sun activity is set up to model a convection that occurs on the surface of the sun. And you can model it in your kitchen. Check out sciencefriday.com/convection.